we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking.
What kind of poetry?
Vogon poetry.
What the hell is that?
Welcome to Deep Thinking, the only motorcycle road racing podcast that not only knows what Vogon poetry is, but appreciates it.
Okay, now explain it.
He said Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at
la-suspension.com.
I'm Michael Gugis. You can find my rantings on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. And the Vogons.
Number
from
75. 75. Oh, from Douglas
the
Adams. Okay.
Don't you remember?
I was close. I was thinking of Star Trek.
They were torturing them by... He's like, now let me read you some of my poetry. Don't you remember?
That's the problem with that book, right? There's so many layers. You can only read it 50 times, right?
The Vogon Poet Laureate was about to embark on a reading of his 12-volume opus, Ode to a Small Gray Lump I Found in My Left Armpit, when his intestines ran up through his neck in an attempt to save the universe, strangled his own brain.
The Vogons were the super evil warrior race that
just
were
stupid.
Mean to everybody.
They were just stupid.
Yeah. They're like Klingons times a billion.
Oh, God. Or the French.
So what did you have for dinner today?
BMW. I had BMW.
You had beef.
I had beef,
famous
chicken.
Dave's Barbecue.
Dave's Barbecue. We had chicken. We had pork. We had,
corn muffins.
Yeah, oh my God.
Courtesy of BMW at Fast Track Riders at Fontana Auto Club Speedway.
Right.
On what is Saturday?
Yeah,
April
23rd.
There you go.
You know why I'm eating their food? You know why I made a trip down here to eat their food? It's revenge. It's like when you go to a buffet at Vegas. You eat the first...
This is totally not why they
you eat gave... The... you eat the first...
Nate Kern's a nice guy.
I like Nate. Okay, look. You go through the buffet the first time because you're hungry. You go through the second time because the food tastes good. You go through the third time because those motherfuckers said you can have all you want for $12.95 and you're going to make them pay for it, damn it.
I only went once.
Oh, well, not this buffet.
I want to be a lean, mean...
I only went twice, but I used to own a BMW motorcycle. The part that I needed was ridiculously overpriced, so I feel like I got a little bit back tonight. And I'm going to leave it tomorrow, if you know what I'm talking about. Ed!
You know that thing about you like try to piss off your students by telling jokes that they don't think's funny,
right?
And you laugh. You might want to remember
that
they are paying to be there.
I'm not trying
to
piss them off.
They're kind of sort of the boss.
No, I'm not trying to piss them off. I'm trying to amuse myself.
Well, that's too easy.
And that's the joy of being me, Ed.
So one of our listeners, one of my customers, posted up on Facebook like how much she wanted a Moto 3 bike. Like they're really trick.
Right.
She's at COTA watching the races. I know how a group of 120 of single cylinder bikes with loud pipe sounds in a group, right? It sounds like B-17s thundering.
Right.
They all get together and they get that frequency
harmonic thing going on.
Coolest sound ever.
Right.
Okay. And she's like, I gotta get one of those. Well, she has a 125 RS.
Right.
A real GP bike.
Right, right.
And so I had Michael do a little bit of research to see the lap times difference.
Right.
Right? Your 125 GP bike is better than a Moto 3 bike.
No, it's not.
Michael came up with the lap times are just a little bit faster than the Moto 3 bikes now. But,
right,
of course, the tires are however many years better,
right,
and all that stuff. So, basically, it's a wash.
They got the Moto 3 bikes were getting to be significantly quicker, and then they changed the rules, so it slowed them down. But, I mean, talking 2%.
It's a very small speed difference. But when you compare the cost of a GP 125,
right,
like an RS 125, mm-hmm, to a modern Moto 3 bike, you get, like, what?
Oh,
10 RS 125s for one Moto 3
bike.
You're doing a little... So, your bike rocks.
Yeah, you're doing
Love your bike. Have some fun with your bike. Learn your bike. You know what? You can change the jets. Can't do that on a Moto 3 bike.
Oh, my God. you can't. The funny thing is, Moto 3 is an interesting category because with that stock, you know, basically it's a spec motor. Okay, you got your choice of your Honda or your KTM. That's what you got.
Well, it's a spec motor by accident. You know, you're saying it became a spec, but it's not a spec motor.
Okay, you've got...
There's like no freaking rules.
Well, that's a pretty good way to describe it. There's a real set of rules.
There's a bore and stroke, and there's a displacement and whatever.
Right.
But
there's only two people make the motor.
Then so, that is what makes it kind of like a spec.
So over in
Reverse
Europe...
spec.
Yeah. So over in Europe, there's a whole bunch of people who make... who make custom frames for these things, you know? And the bikes are really kind of trick, but those are like, if you will, the customer RS125 that you could get in a box for $7,500 back in the day. It didn't come with the race kit. You just got the bike, you
well,
know?
Well, no, no. The bike was a full-on race kit, race bike.
Even the cheap ones?
Yeah. And then when you say it didn't come with a race kit, you should say it didn't come with kit parts.
That's what I mean.
Because it makes it sound like it didn't be, no, it's a race bike already.
Right.
Like, no license plate
or lights
have ever touched this bike.
Right.
No one had to open the wiring harness and remove the turn signal wires.
Right.
You don't buy a kit harness. It is a kit harness.
It is, right.
Well, that's not true. You could get kit harnesses because the TZ had a different ECU.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
Perfect example. So the TZ, 2000 TZ,
okay,
came with a new map. So the map for the one cylinder was different than the other cylinder.
Because it was a V.
Map. Well, right. Because, yeah, you needed a different amount of advance on one cylinder. I forget which one got more advanced so that you'd get the same burn back on your spark plug. Because you have to think of it as two 125 engines.
Right.
They have to be tuned separately.
Right. Because
they're different displacement in crankcase volume, different angles, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we changed. The jetting was different front to rear. We called that stagger. Or left to right, or top to bottom, however you want to call it. And the timing was different, okay? So the 2000 TZ, they had enough data. They just made the maps different enough so that now we didn't have to set the stagger manually,
okay?
The kit box gave you a whole bunch of different maps, 7 of them, I think it was, and a knob you could change while riding. Don't do that. That's fucking bad. I mean, right, because theoretically, you go, well, I'm on the straightaway at Brainerd, so I want 2.
Right.
Now I'm coming to the cornery part of Brainerd, so I want 7 or whatever. You know how long that's going to work, right? You're going to totally have it on 12 pretty soon. Anyway, the problem was that when you use those other maps, the stagger thing was gone, and you had to go back to manually doing the stagger. So it wasn't convenient and easy to do it.
And
so you know everybody that got those? They just ran them on number 6, which was the stock mat. But I got the kit box, woo!
And that's kind of the point.
And
I was
there was a knob
to.
On the dash that your friends could see, and they knew, you knew you had it.
Look, who's got the big
knob.
Yeah,
but you know what the result of that was?
Yeah, that big knob.
You had to worry all the time. Has my knob chain been bumped? I have to check it, right? It's one more thing. Like if you watch a guy before the race, right?
Hold on. Hang on just
a
second.
My knob.
You can go ahead and insert your own check my knob joke here. Go ahead, Ed.
If you watch me at an AMA race,
right?
I'm like nervous. Everything's done. I got 2 hours to wait, right? Check the gas 12 fucking times, right? Oh my God. And now I had check the gas and check the knob and check the time, right? It's just, you need to take a nap.
And that's why those the customer bike, if you will, works
and
so well for
perfect.
So
yeah,
many
exactly.
racers, right? And then you would get the...
And you could go to your friend, and he had the same bike, and you could compare notes and share parts, and it's all good.
Yep.
So if you go buy a Moto 3 bike, you're going to be by yourself.
And
nobody else has got one.
And not only that, those Moto 3 bikes that are outrunning the 125s are crazy trick.
Oh, yeah, and the engine lasts... How long is a race?
Yeah,
22 laps, right?
No, they've
got the engine lasts 24 laps.
No, they've got a minimum. They've got a maximum number of engines they can use in that class. But
the engine lasts 50 laps,
woo-hoo!
Right?
Oh, no, I think the Honda, the factory MotoGP3 bike now. If you're one of the special teams that you're allowed to buy the really good one, it's $400,000. And it's just insane.
How many laps is it good for?
It's good, whatever that. However,
a season
divided by however many engines you have.
Oh, right.
Exactly. Yeah. That segment plus 2 miles. You know. Yeah.
You know, I told you when I put the front tire on my Ninja, right?
It was like 1980.
October of 2014 in Vegas.
Right.
Okay, is when I started using it.
Right.
Yesterday I flipped it.
I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big deal. It was all over Facebook.
I don't think it made it that far. So I got another year to go.
Yeah, easily, right?
You know what?
What?
I've won 2 number one plates with that tire.
With that tire.
Still going good. Okay, what do we got?
Man.
You had a question. It's the thing that reminded you was, has my crew ever stuck a wrong tire on during a pit stop?
Now,
the thing about that is that I've never had it where there was a choice, right? We got a, they're all the same
tires. Spec
tires,
right?
No, no. It was an endurance race. We had
okay.
all that, right?
So got it. So the reason I'm gonna ask you the question, then I'm gonna tell the story. Ed, I wanna know what the worst thing that you've ever seen the crew do to the bike mid race has been. Now, I'm going to let him think about that for a while because we don't want to incriminate anybody, get fired, or beaten by anybody who might know who we're talking about. So here's the backstory. World Superbike, Assen, started off on a soaking wet track, but with sunshine, Assen dries quickly. It was very windy, and that dried it even more quickly. And World Superbike rules, they only use one bike. So they have to do tire changes, but they do it. They don't want to put quick change stuff on the bikes because they complain about the expense. Cheap bastards. Okay, they need to come over from Wira for a while.
I mean, it depends on what you mean by quick change, right? Because a few things to trap the spacers, that doesn't cost anything.
Right.
But you want to have those wheels where you pull the rear wheel out and the chain stays on the bike.
Why not?
That's really expensive.
You know what?
And, well, the thing is, remember, those guys can't get by with one wheel. They need a rack of wheels.
Right?
Well, then it adds up.
Especially
when you remember that they have the normal wheels and they would have to buy these other wheels.
Okay. So it's I thought it was actually a fairly clever way that they handled this. They gave you 61 seconds minimum pit stop time.
Oh, good. I like that, right?
So your crew has
some guys are like just standing around waiting because they're too fast.
Right?
Damn it, man.
Exactly.
But you know, that's nice because that means you don't have to risk on the fuel.
Right.
Maybe you can check the oil if you need to.
One team change your rear shock.
Yeah.
Straight up change the shock from a dry setting, a wet setting one to a dry setting one. And the thing I liked about it, because somebody kind of thought about this, 61 seconds is enough time to do what you needed to do. You could not only have two people
with a pro team and a bunch of guys.
A pro team,
Not Mike and Fred in there, you know.
No, but you could
you
could have two people changing the tires. Yeah.
You
could
plan in advance.
A guy who could plug in a laptop and go boom, dry map.
Right.
You saw the rider. You didn't have to fuel a bike because it had to be
right.
So you didn't have to worry about that. The rider would sit back and somebody would go on the front forks and they're spinning that and stuff
preloading, I like that.
But if your crew sucked, it was going to take them more than 61 seconds. So you still had to practice it. The crew still had an element to this,
no, that's neat.
And
and
here's the mistake that got made. Tom Sykes came in and the plan was, when I come in, I want an intermediate front and a slick rear.
Right.
And he went out and they put in, when he came in, they accidentally put in an intermediate rear. And it was funny because he ran down Jonathan Ray.
That weird definition of funny creeps in again.
Funny when I'm not on that bike, right? Well, he ran down Jonathan Ray and got to within a second of him and then we started going back.
So did he know he had a slick?
No.
They totally missed it.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden, the rear is just, and you could just see it. Ray comes to this corner, like the camera's like head on. Ray is just like on rails, and Sykes is dirt tracking it in the back. Right. It's like,
so the way that happened, it's not as bad as it sounds.
It was
in a warmer till the whole
time.
And then now it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, you can't.
Pretty much. You can't go run somebody back.
And he got second?
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, the biggest mistake you make is the guy got. To me, a big mistake is like, you know, crash, somebody got hurt, there's a fire, you know,
right?
Okay, so the biggest pit stop mistake I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So 24 Hours of Willow Springs, 1990.
Okay.
So the team pitted next to Team Hawaii is on a hurt. Some kind of 600.
Okay.
I don't remember the bike.
Was it the FZR?
No. We had the FZR from hell in 91. If anybody knows where that bike is, burn it.
It's like Chris.
So these, you know, we know the race is 24 hours long. I remember telling Morgan Syme, the guy who's going to lead off for us to start.
Okay.
I said, dude, you do not come around in the lead. I want you to take the whole first lap, making sure you're not in the place where you get taken out because some idiot who's all excited, right?
Right.
We were 25th at the end of the first lap overall, and we finished third overall. So anyway, we're
down. If he had just gone a little harder on that first lap.
Yeah, we're geniuses. Anyway, it's the first pit stop. The sun has come down, so you need to be plugging your lights on, right?
Right.
So the race started in the afternoon, so we have our night lights on the bike. And all we have to do is, during a fuel stop and a rider change, is plug in the little wire and peel off the tape. It's going
to
take way less time.
Right, they're trying to so put it's a rack non-issue. Of nights in.
So that's what we did. These guys come in, and they put the bike up on jack stands because they're going to change the tires. They had two guys lift it up, and guys put the jack stands. So it's kind of slow and whatever. And then they just walked away. For like 4 minutes, there was nobody in their pit at the wall or over the wall or anywhere in sight. Like, they were all in the motorhome deciding what to do or something. So we're like, what's going on? They were ahead of us when they did this. So the total pit stop, they changed tires at like 4 hours into the race.
Okay.
And turned on their lights and then finally went back out. We changed our first tire at the 7 hour mark, the rear tire. Mm-hmm. Cord showing all the way around the right side. We couldn't go any farther. And of course, and by that time we were, you know, whatever, well up the results.
50 miles ahead.
But I can't remember any kind of like weird ass thing. But, right, I'm never in that world.
Right.
Now, when I was crew chiefing for Chris, and we were sponsored by Pirelli on the big team, mm-hmm. and we were a development team for Pirelli, I had opportunity to make mistakes in practice. Because people think, oh, you get the free tires, it's all really cool. Mm-hmm. But we were given like 10 tires a weekend mm-hmm. that we had to ride on all of them and give some real feedback
right.
on. And so we were spending practice time doing this testing stuff and mm-hmm. not... Now, some of it is actually still practice, but some of it's like, well, that fucking tire was total...
Exactly.
Oh, how about this one? Dude, yeah. That tire rocks. Oh, yeah, but we only have one of those. But I need more!
I need more of them. You know, John said that used to happen with Michelin occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
They'd just come over, and some guy he'd never seen before would say, here, put this on for the race. You know, they go smoke everybody.
So I had, you know, and then, so I've got all these rims, and I got racks to put them on, and I got all these tire warmers, and I got my duct tape, and I got my different color Sharpies, and I have to have a code system, right? Because we don't want people to take pictures, and it's useful information, right?
Right.
So I have like ABC tire, and I've got a piece of paper that tells me what these are. And I've got to make a mark so that I know that it's fully up to temperature and I got the right pressure in it and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Right. And, but all of it also has to not give up any information. And I'm just like seriously spending a lot of brain cells on making sure that part is correct and we're doing our job and all that such. And the only way, I had a helper, right?
Right.
It actually was funny. It, kind of a weird situation. My helper at the track was the guy who built the bikes at the shop.
Okay, got it.
So it's better if you could have your crew chief be the guy building everything at the shop, but we didn't have that. So anyway, we're constantly doing a lot of, did you this, did we get that?
Oh, and exhausting.
It's a lot, that's why you see the top teams, there's a guy whose only job is to think.
Yeah.
Right? They got mechanics who are doing the wrenching,
right.
And they got a guy who looks like he's a lazy, bossy guy going, hey, change that tire. But there's so much to think about, and you can put an intermediate tire on a bike instead of a slick, right?
You grab the wrong one off the shelf.
I love that rule, 61 seconds.
The minimum.
It's like a minimum weight rule where it allows you to do things if you
want
to.
Put that on the list. I want to talk about minimum weight.
It's simple to understand.
Yeah.
It's simple to enforce.
But
it accomplishes your goal with no ifs, ands, or buts. It's not three different classes in MotoGP with different boxes, you know?
Well,
what was I supposed to write down?
Minimum weight.
I'm actually
working on an essay about that that's going to appear on motorbike roadracing.blogspot.com here soon.
Apparently, I'm a secretary now.
Yeah, well, you know what? Put on a skirt, you know? Make yourself useful.
Whenever I do that, it blows up and slows my lap times down.
Oh, God, yeah, because everybody around you has been blinded and is crashing. What was I saying? The way
my wrong reading glasses back. I can't see anything.
We're at 18 minutes or so.
Yes.
The pit stop time, the minimum pit stop time, you have to think about it, though. Because if it's too long...
Well, no, yeah.
Yeah, it takes all the fun out of
right? Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know?
But they do that in those super ultra marathon run through the woods things.
Mm-hmm.
You come to this check station,
right.
And you have to stay there for an hour.
Right.
Meanwhile, you can sleep, or you can eat, or you can pop your blisters.
Right.
There's a doctor there. And it's a good safety check, right?
Right.
They have somebody there that goes,
right.
Sorry, dude, you're done. You're out of here, right?
I saw that. I covered the Badwater Ultra Marathon one year. And yeah, there was a guy. It was like, you know, watch the doctor look at a guy and go, you are not leaving here. He told one of the runners, crew members. He said, yeah, he does not leave here for 4 hours. He goes to that hotel. If I see him leave his room within 4 hours, he's DQ'd.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's like tech inspection.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Sorry, you ain't going on the track with that. You're going to endanger everybody else. This guy goes out, and now the rescue crew is not available for the dude who falls down the cliff. Right?
And, you know, I know we talked about the MotoGP jumping bikes or swapping bikes. You know what that does take out a little bit out of it? It takes the crew out a little bit out of it. NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, the crew's ability to change. Hold on.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
You know, so that
But I think my point is that MotoGP had the ability to do it differently, and they want to do it.
Yes.
They own Motor Superbike, so they've got a show where you're changing the wheels.
Right.
Well, let's have a show where you do something different.
No, you don't.
I mean, let's face it.
Excuse me.
Those guys jumping from one bike and landing on the other bike and tearing off at
amazing.
It was like, wow.
It is amazing.
And,
yeah.
You know, I hope they start wearing cups.
Oh, boy.
Hey,
I think most of them
2-minute board.
Wait a minute. Before we get to the 2-minute board, you know what, Ed? Let's give them some bonus material. Let's go long tonight.
We talked about this. We use up all our material.
We got a list. And I've got 4 more things I need to add to the list. And just very briefly, what do you think about the idea that I've heard popped around the internet about the MotoGP 1000cc 4-cylinder bikes, Moto3 250cc 1-cylinder bike, Moto2 500cc twins? What do you think?
This is the first I've heard of it. I don't
really
give a fucking fine. I don't care.
Really?
Yeah.
None whatsoever. Do you think at all that we're gonna?
It's like, I know that my opinion isn't gonna matter no matter what. Right,
but it matters to me.
It's so convoluted how they came up. Like when we had 125, 250, 500, there was this logical progression. Right,
the same thing.
It made sense,
and it's the same idea.
But,
you got the same.
But those were different times and different situations and different kinds of engines, and the economy is different, and the population is different. Everything is different. So that to try to hang on to one little part of how it was just because it had this logic. Nobody wants a 500cc twin cylinder street bike.
This is my point. That's exactly it. You win the grand prize, Ed, because you independently reached the conclusion that I Michael
Gugis.
Oh my
God, Gugis, I agree with Michael.
And you didn't even know
melting.
It.
I'm melting.
This is exactly
the podcast is done. We're stopping.
This week, exactly. Last episode.
Sorry, folks.
That was exactly my point. When I saw it, it made all kind of engineering sense, and I just thought, nope, nobody's going to buy 500 twin.
Yeah, there's all these things that you can make it sound like it's a great idea while you follow that train of logic.
Right.
But the result is it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Look, what's the racer's job to get paid? What's the team's job? To either develop stuff for the factory or to get paid.
Right.
Right?
What's
so
the factory's job? To
show,
sell motorcycles.
You know, yeah.
And you know, what are you going to learn by building a 500 twin that you're not going to learn at the 120 or the 250 or the... Yeah. It's just pointless.
It's all the same. And I get it that it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool.
Yeah, of course it was cool.
But those days are gone.
Yeah.
Right? And remember, we used to race on the highways with bikes that were a fraction of the speed that they can go now, right?
Right.
And it took forever to get to that speed.
Right.
Now we're still racing on the street because it's fucking cool, but the bikes have 200 plus horsepower out of the box. You know, I mean, absolutely, I can go ride any motorcycle anywhere and not crash. I can go slow enough to not crash.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are doing a version of that, and good for them. But what the Isle of Man was then is not what it is now.
Is no longer what it is.
And that's true of everything. Well, there's a famous book, right? You Can Never Go Home. It's about you go back and all this. And the, basically, it's you go back and the giant tree you had a treehouse in is a fucking bush because you were a little kid. That's the text of the book, right? And that's true of everything in life. You got to have a good time today doing the thing that you're doing. And yeah, it's a tough problem to figure out what the format should be. But you know what? Those dumb motherfuckers took that job. Let them figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll criticize it if it's bad, and I'll compliment them if it's good.
And we're just going to head them off of the pass with this one and go, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, that's pointless. It has to be market-based.
Exactly.
Right? It's like the people going, oh, I love two-strokes. Yeah, great, but they're irrelevant now.
And you put a 500 twin in front of anybody, and they go, oh, nice girl's bike.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
so
they just sound stupid.
The 500 twins?
Yeah
they sound a little
flat. Inline four anything. You know what? You want to have a really cool, neat sounding, maybe I'm crazy, you know, a 6-cylinder 400s.
Yeah, or just make the 500 a V-twin. force them to make a V-twin. That would sound kind of cool.
There's a lot of ways, crazy arguments you can make for stuff.
All right, okay, 2 minute board.
2 minute board.
Nikki Hayden.
Yeah. On the box.
Right?
Where?
Assen, World Superbike.
Dry race or wet race?
Wet race. No, no. Race? This
no,
one,
the dry race,
yeah,
right?
This was the dry race.
Two races. Yeah. One race was regular. One race was in the rain. What did he get in the second? The rain race? Not as good.
Eighth.
A little ways down.
Something
those
like that.
Kind of races, anything
well, it was
happen.
It was all about what
when
timing.
Did you pit, right?
Yeah, timing
exactly.
The pit stop. But the great thing about it was Nikki, first off, he was competitive. He was never more. He was in the lead group.
No,
for this race.
Yeah.
I'm saying
he's going to be competitive all
right.
year.
But in this race, lead pack the entire time.
Yeah.
Guy, the first occasionally swaps with second. Second and third are dicing back and forth. He's no more than a second back. He's pushing. He says, every time I tried to take a break and relax a little, I see him going away. So I'm on it. But I'm thinking, I got something for the end of this race. And then Vandermark is in third. Michael Vandermark's teammate, is in third. Two laps to go. He gets to turn three, and he bends it. And I mean, that bike might still be crashing, dude. It's like that crash in Talladega Nights, okay? Nikki goes, hell yeah! Third, I'm going to the front. Two corners later, Nikki Hayden nearly bends it. And he goes, third is good.
So the interesting tie-in here that I thought of while you were describing this so enthusiastically is there's a lot of what is he going to do in MotoGP right now, right? Mm-hmm. Lorenzo goes to Ducati. How's that going to work?
Right.
Is Vinales, how do you say his
Vinales.
Name?
Vinales.
Is he going to go to Yamaha? Is he going to stay with Suzuki? Boy, both look like good decisions for him, right? That's a great place. Damn, should I have the blueberry pancakes or the blueberry waffles? Oh, life is tough, right?
Right.
You know, so anyway, there's a lot of that going to be going on.
I'd go to Yamaha.
And if you want to know what it looks like when you wonder and think and carefully decide and make the right decision, it looks like third at Assen on your superbike ride after you've been in MotoGP in the back for a long time.
Yeah.
So good job, Nikki.
Yeah,
looking
absolutely.
Forward to seeing more of this. And by the way, dude, we love you even if you finish last. We don't care. We just want to see you having fun.
Exactly. And keep the hair. The hair looks awesome.
What's he got now?
He's got the whole faux mohawk thing. It's like, God, man.
That guy has been Prince's cutting edge on music for
dude,
a long, long time.
All I'm going to say
Nikki
is
has always been out there on the hair.
I am uncomfortable with the way my wife responds to images of Nikki Hayden, okay?
He's Michael Gugis.
He's Ed Sorba. Aloha.